S or E.
I'm a friend of Sarah Connor. I was told that she's here. Could I see her, please?
No, can't see her. She's making a statement.
Where is she?
Look, it may take a while. I want to wait. There's a bench over there.
I'll be back.
We're sending you back to the future!
What was his name? The departed.
Flash Gordon.
You mean Dumbo.
Nothing's free in Waterworld.
On an hour, he could have total recall.
And this is England.
The 300 Spartans!
He has a corpse bride!
Why do they call you Dirty Harry?
The Bible calls this day Armageddon.
Watching out for the bad boys.
Welcome to Con Air.
Welcome to the Rock.
You have 13 hours in which to solve the labyrinth.
General, I propose we go forward with your monsters versus aliens idea thingy.
Please consider this my 2 weeks' notice.
You two characters are going to Top Gun.
You are
welcome to episode 59 of Cinema Crespo Diso. Yes, thank you very much. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo, just hanging out in the Cinema Crespo Diso studio with my co-host, Drew Sikagman. Drew, how's it going?
How's it going, dude?
Hanging out, man. Doing good, you know. The end of days for Crespo Diso Studio version one.
The boat has almost sunk. We're almost completely underwater.
The boat has sunk. We are now, we can go ahead and tell them, we are now in a life raft. All is lost, Robert Redford. We're floating in a life raft. The boat has sunk.
But we still got our podcast equipment.
We have the essentials. Cinema Crespo Diso Studio.
I'm not gonna lie, hanging this
1.0 this is done.
This battery just kind of chilling in the water back there.
It's safe.
Kind of freaks me out.
It's safe. How else do we need the power?
Yeah, I know.
We need the broadcast.
I get that, but I'm saying it still kind of freaks me out.
It's just water and electricity. Watch the wires by your feet, though.
Perfectly safe.
Thing. Those exposed wires without the rubber.
Heavy insulation.
Kind
of dangerous. It's okay.
I mean, I know I took your rubber galoshes, and now so I'm insulated, but...
It's okay, dude.
We'll be fine.
You're the host, I'm the co-host. These things happen.
We'll be fine. We're just going to wash up ashore pretty soon, and we'll get set up in Crespo Diso Studio 2.0, and we'll shove that baby out back into international waters then.
Yeah.
But we're doing it right now. We're here. We're ready to go. We got thank you for downloading. If you download us from iTunes, thank you very much. Please go back and rate us 5 stars and review us, right?
Right.
You know how long it's been since anyone left a review?
Probably 6 months.
For a long time. It's been a while. Guys, we need... That's a part of the way podcasts get exposure, because if you get a lot of activity in terms of downloads and reviews and ratings like that, then it becomes available, and they're like the new and noteworthy. We're under new and noteworthy for a while. When a bunch of people went out there and put in reviews, nice reviews, 5 stars. I mean, quick stuff, doesn't take that long. Our podcast was out there with a bunch of other awesome new podcasts for people to download. But then you got lazy people. You got lazy and you stopped, and it got off. Now it's not there. Now we need it back. We need to be what's hot. We need to be what's happening.
I mean, if I could write more than one review, I would. But
right.
I can't. They won't let me.
If we could stuff the ballot box, we would, but we can't. So we need your help. Also, if you're on Stitcher, if you're listening to us through Stitcher, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Go ahead and add us to your favorite list. And I think there's a way to review us on Stitcher.
Is there?
I got to explore that.
You tell me.
I got to learn more about it.
I had never even seen the Stitcher website.
Stitcher's cool. It's interesting. You know, it's over 20,000 shows available on there. That's how many different podcasts are available over music and sports and entertainment. It's a ton. And I remember there's some sort of stat where like, 60 or 70% of those podcasts are merely labeled as comedy.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of just comedy podcasts. The typical think of people just sitting around just
trying to be funny.
Just trying to be funny. Trying their damnedest. That's why I ain't trying. Well, I kind of try to be funny, but I ain't doing a show where I'm about trying to be funny.
Yeah, no, we would fail epically.
Yeah. Not my forte, you know? I try to bring some entertainment to the whole movie discussion, but...
Yes.
But just going out, I'm going to do comedy now. No,
boom. Chris Crespo on stage.
Chris Crespo comedy? Fail. straight up fail on that one. But there's a shit ton of that. Something like the movie entertainment culture portion of the podcast community, it's like 10%.
Word.
A lot smaller. On Stitcher, over 20,000 shows available. Our ranking is always fluctuating up and down, but we're somewhere between like 5,000, 6,000 regularly.
That's not bad.
That's all right.
At least we're in the top 25%.
I'll take that, right?
Definitely.
So if you're on Stitcher, hey, that's how you can help us out. If you just went straight to chriscrespo.com, well, yeah, you keep doing that.
Chriscrespo.com.
That's cool, too. Go ahead and even, you know, there's comment section on the site, guys. You can easily leave comments about the shows or any of my reviews and stuff. I'm going to put up my review soon of a movie we saw just today. We'll be talking about it pretty soon. We got a lot to talk about on that one for sure. I'm actually kind of looking forward to get into that one, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I am.
Interesting.
I can't wait to see what
you got to say about this.
I got some interesting things to say
this about stuff.
This little fucking movie that we saw. So thank you very much for downloading. We appreciate it. Let's get this show started. What did you say about that, Drew?
Okay, sure. Why not? I mean, do I really have a freaking choice?
Yeah,
I don't think I do. But so if I said no, I'm not ready to get the show started, what, the show just stops?
Well, we could stop. We don't have to do the Crespidiso Randomizer 9000 for Netflix Pick of the Week. We can go ahead and wait for you to be ready. Do you need something?
No, I'm good.
I see you got a beer. I got a beer. We got the randomizer.
I'm good.
We're good.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can start.
Uh huh.
All right. Well, then here we go. Let's bring out the microwave oven thing that we set up last week for the.
It's at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, that one didn't survive. But we do have the Netflix instant pick of the week chicken. So let's bring the chicken over here. There we go. We got the sea.
All right. Well, you gotta poke him again and see if he coughs out. There we go. All right.
There we go. That stupid fucking chicken. He finally brought over. He coughed up a Netflix pick. But let's see if it. You know, like March 1st, Dances with Wolves is gone. That makes me sad. If you haven't seen Dances with Wolves yet, for sure you gotta check that out. Drew Cogburn is making sure that whatever the chicken brought over is still available. Oh no, Drew!
Sorry, chicken. Gotta poke him a couple times.
Tell the people what they missed out on.
The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, they took away the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the dimension. Oh my god! That's RoboCop. That's a RoboCop pre-RoboCop man. Too bad, people. Go to your local library and look for Buckaroo Banzai. Let's bring over. So let's poke that chicken again. Let's make him cough up another Netflix pick. That stupid chicken. I wish the microwave.
Man,
makes the microwave so much better.
Is this some sort of silly joke, or is that actually the name of a movie?
Oh, Drew, you got the zonk that says try again. You got to try again. That's a zonk. Go ahead and leave it out there.
This chicken's stupid. Poke him again.
If you get three zonks, you're out of here. That means I got to do the show by myself.
Poke him.
Okay, so come on.
Poke the chicken again.
All right, chicken. Here we go. You stupid chicken. I can't believe you got a zonk. Yeah, see, that's the first time one's ever got one. There's a whole bunch of those in there, actually. A whole ton of different things where it's if you get three of them in a row.
Then they're banned forever?
Not forever, just for the show. You're out of here. And so if it happens to a guest, we got to kick the guest out.
No, man.
It's going to be very awkward if it ever happens. But.
Oh, we just saw this guy today. The Untouchables.
The Untouchables. Hey, so, and that one's not coming off anytime soon. You check the availability down there.
Yeah.
It's not saying something crazy. Got one double check.
No, it doesn't say anything about it being gone anytime soon.
Well, then let me go ahead and write that down. The Untouchables is this week's Netflix pick of the week. It's a great movie. It's Brian De Palma. 1987-6.
Right the first time.
Damn it! I should have stuck with the 7. All right, enough with the fucking. I'm getting rid of this stupid goddamn. No more of that.
I told you'd get sick of the soundboard.
God damn it! That's the worst. So hacky. All right. The Untouchables, starring Kevin Costner.
Yes.
Very relevant.
Correct.
Weird how the world works that way, isn't it, Drew?
Sometimes.
Sean Connery.
Yes.
Who has been retired for a number of years. Almost had a story about him for a second half of the show, but I skipped it. It's some story about how he's not going to be involved in some sort of tax fraud case or some shit. I have no idea.
Okay.
So, but yeah, he's that 80-year-old man has been retired for quite a while. Robert De Niro.
Correct.
As Al Capone.
Pacino.
Al Pacino?
Yeah, as Al Pacino.
Yes.
What the hell?
Robert
Sorry.
De Niro is Al Pacino.
Correct.
And as mid-80s Chicago Al Pacino. It's a screenplay written by David Mamet. David Mamet himself, and movies directed by Brian De Palma. Movie is probably best known for having a scene where there's a shootout on like the courthouse steps, and there's a baby carriage going down in slow motion.
Yes,
and the music's very dramatic. And that scene is a 100% direct rip-off of a scene from a movie called Battleship Potemkin, which is like a silent movie from 18, something like that. And it's on the Netflix.
Nice.
This movie, Battleship Potemkin. And there's a scene in that movie where there's like a shootout on courthouse steps and a baby carriage is boom, boom, boom going down the stairs. So this is an homage to that, so like we've been saying for a while. Amateurs create professional steal. Brian De Palma knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he's just straight up stole.
He knows his cinema history.
That's the way to do it.
He's one of those guys. A lot of people compare him to Hitchcock because he has a lot of that style going on. Yeah. I'm a big fan of De Palma. I love his style. I think he's really good. I mean, Scarface, Dressed to Kill.
All great movies.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And not all of his movies are great.
No.
He's made up his share of stinkers, especially correct. Lately as he's been older. Even movies, but then even a movie like Snake Eyes,
mm-hmm.
which at the end of the day is pretty shitty.
Yeah, pretty much.
But there's some cool things about it.
There are.
It does open.
Nick
with,
Cage like, gets all crazy.
It opens with like some 15, 18 minute, like one of those fake, like one take shots, you know, where it's like like two or three takes expertly sliced together.
Yeah.
So it looks like one continuous take. It's one of those and it's awesome. And then, of course, Nick Cage doing his awesome Nick Cage thing.
Being weird and wearing a snakeskin jacket.
And typical De Palma form, there's a femme fatale type woman
yep.
with wig. Like, wig comes off. Obviously, you find out it's not a blonde. It's brunette the whole time, shit yep. like that. Just like in the movie called Femme Fatale with Antonio Banderas. And,
her name? Rebecca Romijn Stamos.
And that's a movie where it's like... When I first saw it, I was like, "Oh, what a like screw this movie." That's some cool parts, but f this movie. It's so
well.
Stupid.
If by cool parts you mean Rebecca Romijn Stamos making out with girls, yes, there were cool parts
and some cool, like, interesting shot action scenes and stuff like that. But yeah, absolutely, and some twists and turns here and there. But I hated the ending.
Yeah,
and I still don't like the ending. I think the ending's it builds up to something crazy and wild and very Hitchcock, and then it has a cop out ending, which I don't like. But the second time I watched it, like years later, I appreciate it a lot more for all the Brian De Palma-isms. It's like the most Brian De Palma-y movie ever in terms of themes and the women and the way it's shot. Pictures of like slow motion feet running away and like feet chasing the, you know, it's just a De Palma. The first Mission Impossible movie, I think that's one of my, of all four of them.
Yeah, probably one of my favorites.
It's that one and the fourth one.
The fourth one was crazy.
Brad Bird, yeah. He's an interesting director now, man. So anyway, The Untouchables. Awesome movie. A lot of fun. Great acting. Great cast. There you go. Good job, Drew. Good job, Chicken. Stupid. Chicken was so stupid. But bad idea. All right, here we go. So let's get into the box office review for the weekend. Drew, do you have the numbers in front of you there?
Yes, I do.
Let's go ahead and get that started.
All right. We have the, starting off, number five this week, The Monuments Men. $8.1 million. Total gross of 58, budget of 70.
Monuments Men, you know, I mean, it would be cooler if it was making a little bit more money, but it would also be cooler if the movie was a little better.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not that good. It's, It wants to be heavier than it is. You know, it's like, oh, this is very important. It is a good story. And it's an important story. And I'm glad that it's out there now. People know that this happened. People went through all this hard work to preserve so much history and so much art history.
Yeah.
But the way the movie didn't have that much danger to it. Like we mentioned, the cleanest, calmest day on Normandy Beach ever in a war movie.
Yeah, seriously.
Never seen a war movie where guys get they're on that boat.
Yeah.
You know, when I saw that, I was like, oh shit, they're going. These guys are for real. They're really like going into this shit. And then they step off into the waters and it's just like there's people tanning and there's volleyball and pretty sure I saw a family down there on spread out on the beach having a picnic.
So. Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do? How much was the total?
Total 8.1.
Yeah, 8.1 for the weekend, but I mean total?
Oh, total 58.
It's going to get to, if it's 8.1, another $4 million next weekend, two after that, and then a couple weekends of just under one, it's going to get to like $70 million here.
Well, that's the budget, so they'll break even in the States.
How about making international? So far, they're only at $26 million, but who knows? It doesn't say how many markets they are internationally. So it could be a slow rollout international-wise. Who knows? We'll see about that. So, yeah, Monuments Men, that might be more of a making money on the DVD type of deal.
Yeah.
Who knows? All right, well, let's move on.
Number four this week, we have RoboCop had a weekend gross of $9.4 million, a total gross of 43.6 on a budget of 100.
All right, this is one where they definitely need international to.
They're not going
to
get it.
To save their butts on that. Let me see if I can pull that.
And this movie is very American. It has, I mean, one of the main plot points is that Americans need a human. The rest of the world, screw them.
Yeah, but even the way the movie's made, because it is made by a South American dude, Jose Padilla, who believe is Brazilian. He is bringing sort of an outsider perspective to America in that the movie does open showing American imperialism. You know, they're pacifying the streets with the movie starts in a foreign country with Americans as the bad guys, right? And the media being complicit in all that, being told what they can see and what they can't see, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe there is an appeal to foreign audiences, not only because of the sci-fi RoboCop remake movie.
Yeah.
I mean, they've seen dubs of RoboCop in their country by now.
Oh, I'm sure.
But yeah, it does paint America in not necessarily a good light.
No.
You know? Actually, no, it's not. America's not painted in a good light at all in the movie. Our hero has to battle against the imperialism that's trying to be programmed with and shit, you know. So,
yeah.
So that might explain why it is at $100 million international so far.
Yeah,
puts it at 143 worldwide. So, you know, if you include marketing, what's the budget? 100.
100.
Add another 100 for marketing. You're at 200 million already. Was there any overt product placement in RoboCop? Do you remember?
Maybe
any Dell computers or Acers or. Well, anyway, those RoboCop people, they're barely when it gets a DVD and all that. That's when they'll start making their money. The red box rentals and the TV rights. There's still money in all that shit. So, all right, let's talk about the new movies that came out. What do we got?
All right. Well, one of the new movies came in at number three this week. Uh-huh. Pompeii had a weekend gross of $10 million. Sims total. Budget of 100.
Already 22 million international, so 32 million opening weekend worldwide on a $100 million budget. I don't know, Mr. Paul W.S. Anderson, not so hot. Let's see. That compares to his last movie was Resident Evil Retribution, that opened at 21 million, ended up doubling to 42. Oh, but you know what did worse than this?
What?
The Three Musketeers.
Oh, that movie was so bad.
Opened to $8.6 million and then ended up totaling about $20 million. So again, another one that doubled.
Uh-huh.
His movies almost doubled their opening, but Death Race, $12 million, made $36 million. So if Pompeii made $10 million, it's ended up making anywhere from $20 million to $30 million on a $100 million budget. They needed to explode somehow international markets for them to make any money back. And this just means Paul W.S. Anderson will be ready to make the next Mortal Kombat and or Resident Evil movie as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see this because, to be honest, if given a choice between a Mickey G movie and a Paul W.S. Anderson movie, I'll go Mickey G every time.
Yeah.
Every single time. So let's just go ahead and talk about the movie that we saw.
All right. Well, that comes in number two this week with 3 Days to Kill. Had a weekend gross of $12.3 million, same as total. Budget of 28.
All right. See, that's what these $100 million for Pompeii, $100 million for RoboCop. That's why 3 Days. This is why McGee is going to get to keep working.
Well, yeah, because he makes cheap movies that do all right therefore make a profit.
He's able to turn in a cheap product. It is written and produced by Luc Besson, who has been making and trafficking in this kind of cheap adult action type movie for over a decade now.
Yeah, but now he's. Now he's started getting into the whole family element.
He's been doing that for a few years now. Like the family,
yeah.
Right? Even though that was an adaptation. Yeah,
he's
been squeezing. Taken is all about him
connecting with his daughter.
For a while, he's been making movies that they seem like they're... He wants to make action movies, but for adults. But not in like...
But not for... not in that kind of action movies for adults.
not like this is smart action like... Like a Michael Mann or Chris Nolan type of thing. More like it's for adults and that it's...
Have children.
The movie is ostensibly about family and connecting with your kids, being a good father, and all this like really mushy like Hallmark card stuff.
Yeah.
And then every now and then there's a gunfight.
Yep.
You know. And it is interesting how he did get McGee to do this movie. Luc Besson. Like he's written and produced all the Transporter movies. He got behind that District... District B-13 movie, Banlieue 13,
uh-huh.
which we saw the trailer for the American remake of that.
Yes.
What was it called? Broken Mansion? Broken Mansions? Brick Mansions.
Brick Mansions. Brick Mansions. Like that.
With the RZA.
Yeah.
And Paul Walker doing...
Paul Walker and some random European guy.
A French guy. I wonder if that guy has connected to the original District B-13, which is a pretty cool movie.
Oh, yeah. It was fun.
Right, it came out right at the beginning of that little time period where parkour was really popular.
Yes.
But now they're bringing it back.
And now now we have a parkour action movie.
And so does that mean Paul Walker is going to be like...
All parkour-y? Yes. Well, CG Paul Walker is going to be all parkour-y.
Oh, no. He completed the movie. They don't have to CG him.
Stunt
doubles. Stuntmen.
Yeah.
They'll get a French guy in there with the wig. Because
that dude is totally not hopping and jumping around.
Jumping through windows and stuff. No. He's not. All right. It's tangents. Anyway, so Luc Besson, he traffics in making these type of movies where he'll write and produce them, and then he hands them off to young directors that are trying to make their name, or the people that do know how to make a decent looking movie with very little money. So that's how you get Olivier Megaton and Louis Leterrier.
Yeah.
They start under Luc Besson, and now they're making Hollywood films, right?
Uh huh.
This went kind of reverse. McG started with the Hollywood movies. Now he's making one for French based Luc Besson over here in Europa. What is it? Europa something or other?
Yeah, like Europa Core, yeah. Europa Entertainment, something weird like that.
Yeah, they co produce this one with Relatively Media. And, man, just like the family, all those movies are set in Paris.
Yep.
Often about an American in Paris, yep. You know, because he likes that
dynamic.
That very stereotypical dynamic, which we'll talk about in a second. But I think that, it's a flip of what he normally does, because McGee started Hollywood, now he's working for him. But he's still a guy who can do quite a bit with a little bit of money. He knows, you know, how to make things pop and look good.
Yeah.
So he's good with that. He's definitely... Like these other directors, like the Megaton and the Leterrier, it's definitely more style over substance type.
Yeah. People.
Speaking of which, the movie itself, 3 Days to Kill. Let's talk about this movie. What did you think, Drew? What did you think?
It's that whole action movie for adults thing. You know, there's this mushy family garbage that I cared not for. And then there was...
That wasn't used in the thing at one point when the girl was like, where were you, daddy? Or something like that. Did you have another family? Or was people in front of us?
Really stupid. It was lame. He taught her how to ride a bike, and she was like 16 years old.
Taught her how to ride a bike on a little platform in front of the soccer court.
Uh-huh. We've been there.
Why would anyone go there to learn how to ride a bike?
Because it's probably the only flat spot in Paris. That entire town is on the freaking hills.
You go to a park. There are plenty of parks. Tons of parks.
Anyway,
keep going. I'm
sorry. But yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, Kevin Costner trying to play a badass with some sort of weird coughing disease, and it was kind
of
lame.
Some sort of like brain tumor that went through his lungs?
Yep. That's what they said. Yeah. Made him cough.
And gave him nosebleeds.
Yeah, and all sorts of weird hallucinations and stuff.
Well, that came from the experimental drug, right?
Yes.
That was some sort of glowing liquid.
It was weird.
Did not look healthy to be putting that inside him.
Yeah. And I love how in the beginning of the movie, Amber Heard looked really ugly, like the first scene you saw her.
Yeah, she looked,
and then
like,
all of a sudden
like,
she goes
like more plain.
Yeah. And then she just goes into like weird, like sci-fi spy villain seductress girl who's always changing her hair color, but she's always wearing something tight and black.
Yeah, very over the top.
Yeah.
Hypersexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
But for a PG-13 movie, though.
Well, yeah.
It definitely felt a little cut down.
Oh, totally.
They only said the F word once, and it was like, if it was covered up, bleeped out, taken out, because there was definitely one part where Kevin Costner was like, fucking, he said, like, something fucking something.
Yeah.
And then the audio dropped out. You know, it was weird. And then there was one scene where there's like explicit nudity that then got covered up with CG smoke.
Correct.
Which was very odd.
I was like, that's some really well placed smoke.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense, because otherwise, the action and everything, it was your typical PG-13 action, which I'm starting to hate, which is because it's a very, that cartoon, not even cartoony, because it's just that, you know, people get, like video games, people get shot, there's no consequence, you don't see any blood. That's more disingenuous than showing, like a Tarantino movie where there's someone gets shot and there's a geyser of blood, or a Takashi Miike movie, how over the top violent they are.
Yeah.
Because they're showing the consequences of the violence and how terrible, the terrible results of getting your arm cut off and how it spurts a gallon of blood. I don't want that to happen to me, you know? But in a movie like this, Or like even in World War Z. Do you remember World War Z?
You mean Sans Blood?
It was so Sans Blood to the point where Brad Pitt cut off that woman's hand on the plane and then just wrapped it up. Yep. And there
was not even red on the bandage.
The most bloodless amputation ever. That's disingenuous. Because then you got kids who are like, oh, I can cut off my hand and then nothing's going to come out. I'd be fine, you know, right?
Right.
Anyway, so. So what'd you say? You liked this movie, Drew,
based
on all that?
If they could have cut out like a good half hour of that family shit and added some more, if they would have made it rated R, I would have liked it.
Made it rated R and that whole thing with the CIA and this is the wolf. I gotta get the wolf and to find the accountant and stuff like that. If they had spent more time.
And the albino.
The albino. I want to talk about the albino. So if they had spent more time developing that stuff, there was like a 30-minute stretch in there where he's like teaching his daughter how to ride a bike and then they're arguing about you're late for making dinner and all this stuff.
And then what's going to happen with the prom.
And the prom and the boyfriend. And she's like making out with him, but it doesn't matter. And I'm like, what is the... Why? What's the point of all this? What happened to all the action and the danger? Weren't there people just trying to kill this guy? They had this picture in his pocket wearing a stupid scarf.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, oh, it's cool. I'm gonna fry some fish. I hated his raspy voice. His
and I have Steeler blood running through my veins.
Steeler blood. We love Pittsburgh. Like, what the... Okay. So you didn't like it.
Not really.
Okay, I didn't like it either, really. Luc Besson, for some reason, God bless the guy, he did Fifth Element. And
fantastic movie.
And I really like Leon the Professional. I think it's great.
Yeah, no, it's good.
But this is like just a family trafficked in like a lot of really overt, over-the-top, stereotypical-type characters. You know, the Italian-American thing. And, Italian-Americans are violent. They love mafia movies, et cetera. And then even playing up on his own French stereotypes, the rude Frenchman, stuff like that.
He
did it again with this movie.
American
Cowboys. And then he points it out in the movie, but it's like, are we supposed to think now that you're satirizing this? Because you're not. You're not saying anything. You're just using the stereotypes. So, so you got the violent American cowboy who thinks that he can solve all problems just by flashing his gun, which he does.
Every single problem gets solved
with his gun. Yeah, every problem was solved with his gun. There's the whole, you mentioned the albino.
Yes.
In the very beginning of the movie, first off, the movie starts with like a 3-minute exposition dump. Three characters sit down in a room and they immediately start talking. The wolf starts doing this and then there's the wolf, you gotta do that. And I was just like, my eyes glazed over. Like, I don't give a fuck about this. That's when you know you're in trouble, when a movie just starts right out with heavy exposition, like, fuck this. They started doing that, and then immediately they threw down a picture of a guy, and they were like, here's his right-hand man or whatever, like, slap, the albino. No!
The wolf and the albino.
The albino. Yep. You know, like, there's a lot of albino, there's a movement of albinos. They're like, stop portraying us as the evil people in movies. The only time...
But they look so creepy.
That's the thing. It's not fair to them. It's a genetic... I would be so pissed if I was an albino. Like, this sucks, man. The only way you can turn that into a positive thing is by going to Hollywood and playing villains.
Yep.
And then you're contributing to the problem.
Yep.
Poor
guys. But you're getting paid.
Yeah. But yeah, too bad. The only time an albino role shows up, it's either to be the butt of a joke or to play a villain.
And or the creepy, weird thing.
So he's a creepy, weird villain in this movie who, like, he's German and he likes to decapitate people very violently.
Yes.
And, like, the whole thing with the Asian woman in the beginning. What the fuck is that all about? Yeah. It's so stupid. What else? They not only do like the kind of the rude Frenchman,
yes,
but they also do the rapey Frenchman.
Correct. Right? Yes, they do.
All right, they do
the rapey French kids,
rapey French boy teens. They did Italians. The Italian who was called Guido, and he had the big glasses and the huge nose.
He talked like this.
He's talking like this. He's like, I love my mama. Here's my recipe. Literally, here's my recipe for the sauce. You got to get the tomatoes. And you got to cook the garlic. And it's like, it's so racist. It's like Family Guy racist in terms of how to use the stereotypes.
It almost is.
And it's just like that throughout the whole movie. Every time something pops up, it's just along those lines. And it's borderline offensive and stupid and... so I guess I'm kind of trying to say fuck this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So don't bother seeing it. Don't even.
Yeah.
Don't
go
to theaters.
Nope.
I'd say don't go to theaters. Not even worth the red box. It's on HBO.
It's really not even worth your time.
Nah, it's really not worth your time. It's really stupid. It's. Let me think of something positive to say about it. Let me think. It was nice to see Kevin Costner in a movie so much, like be a lead of a movie.
Yeah, that was refreshing.
I don't understand how this was not straight to, you know, straight to DVD. This totally should have been a red box.
Yeah.
They have so many movies that are like somehow starring Morgan Freeman and John Cusack. They've apparently done like 20 movies together in the last 10 years, and all of them went straight to Redbox and Netflix. And they're all called like the something complex, or
they all have, or the this that
the assassins file or something stupid. So it should have been one of those. I don't know why it wasn't one of those. Why wasn't one of those, Drew?
It should have been the station agent.
No, the station agent was good actually. That does sound like it should be. No, wasn't the station agent? No, yeah, the station agent's with Peter Dinklage.
The number station. My bad.
You saw the number station.
The number station.
Yeah, station agent. Good movie.
Correct.
I didn't see the number station. I think you saw
it. Was,
that
it
one.
Was terrible.
Apparently, that was a John Cusack one, right?
Yep. John Cusack plays same character basically. That was just in this last movie.
Oh, in the 3 Days to Kill.
Yeah, yeah.
Same guy. Is the
old guy disillusioned?
The old guy.
But he's the best.
He is the best. He's, every time he shoots someone, it's like boom, got
right,
right
in the face.
Right in the face. One shot. You suck. Anyway, yeah. So let's screw that movie. What's the number one movie, Jerk?
And what do you think it is? It's a freaking Lego movie, man. Weekend awesome? Gross of $31.45 million. Total gross $183 million on a budget of $60 million. Just in the States, they triple their money.
That's crazy. Only a 36% drop from week to week for them, which is fantastic. Cold. That means word of mouth. Those are, what do they call them, Drew? What's that called when a movie goes from week to week like that and it makes a lot of money? What do they call it? We mentioned this before.
I don't know.
We mentioned this before. I told you.
You tell me.
When a movie is playing in weeks over and over, I keep like Frozen.
Awesome.
Frozen play. It was like in the top five forever.
Yeah.
What's that called?
I don't remember.
No, you don't remember. You're going to remember this time, Drew. All right? It's called when a movie has legs.
It's got legs.
A movie has legs. Frozen.
And she knows how to use them.
And Frozen had legs, and Frozen knew how to use them, man. Yeah. Because it was in the top 10 forever. It kept making money over and over and over every weekend. The Lego movie has legs.
It's going to do the same thing.
It is going to do.
Because it's the only kids movie out. Unless you want to see Frozen again, which is at number 8.
Well, there's a bigger gap between it's Frozen still... and a Lego movie. Another family movie is going to come out, I bet.
Frozen still made $4 million.
Lego movie has so far made $92.5 million international. So it's at $275 million worldwide so far on that $60 million budget. So.
Yeah. It's good money.
Good job.
Can't wait to see Lego movie 2.
Good job, Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I only want to see it if it's another Lord
of course,
Miller
yeah,
joint.
Yeah.
Because, man, those guys.
They're good.
They're quickly becoming a pair of my favorites, my new favorites, you know, new young guys to watch out for. They may not be that young. What if they're like in their 80s?
That'd be awesome.
That would be so weird. So, hey, so there you go. That's your box office review for a weekend. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it. Let's see what new movies we got coming out on DVD this week. Thor, The Dark World.
Okay.
So people just red box that and then go straight to the end credit sequence where you can see the 2-minute scene with Benicio del Toro.
As the collector.
So that way... Guardians of the Galaxy makes a little more sense. We'll talk about Guardians of the Galaxy a little bit in the second half.
Yes, we will.
Nebraska comes out on DVD.
Awesome. Finally get to see that.
It's a very good movie. I really enjoyed it. Blue is the Warmest Color. This is that French 3-hour epic. That's like a French love story between two girls, and it has like a 12-minute explicit sex scene.
Ooh, I forgot about that. I want to see that too.
And Gravity comes out on Tuesday, so we're going to have to revisit that one.
Shabam.
Looking forward to that.
That's awesome.
For sure. All right, Drew. What are new movies coming out in theaters?
Finally, Nonstop comes out.
I hope
so sick of this freaking trailer.
I hope they play the Nonstop trailer.
In front of Nonstop?
Yeah, by accident. We attached an accident. We're sorry. Our bad. Yeah.
I've seen this trailer probably more than any other trailer in recent memory.
Right.
And I just can't wait to get this movie over.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the trailer for The Gray. Because when I was seeing movies every weekend around that time.
It was always The Gray.
And that movie,
The Gray
didn't come out until January.
And it wasn't
they
good.
Started showing trailers
and it
in
wasn't
August.
That good either.
I thought The Gray was okay. Nonstop doesn't look very good. It's the same director from the guy who did Orphan. So I'm holding out hope for that French guy is pretty good. But yeah, that does look really stupid, though.
Yes, it does.
And what else is coming?
Senegued.
That movie's going to bank.
Of course it is, but it's just a cut down version of that History Channel stuff that I've already seen.
It is. I did see somewhere where apparently they did add new stuff.
Okay. Good
but
for
it,
them.
It is a lot of cut down stuff and new stuff. But we, Son of God, another thing that we're going to be talking about a lot in the second half of the show.
Son of God.
So we'll just go ahead and bring that up in a little bit, right?
Right.
All right, so let's take a break. Let's take a break real quick. I got one song here for the Crespo Disco. Just kidding, we're going to get in and out here with the break, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This is off the Solaris soundtrack, one of my favorites. The original soundtrack by Cliff Martinez. Name of the song is Will She Come Back? Will she come back, Drew?
Probably not.
Oh, did you hear that, people? That's Drew chewing on his nail right on mic. Let's listen to Drew eat his nails. That's so disgusting. So incredibly disgusting. There you go, people. That's the sound of Judas or Cogburn eating his nails. That's how you live on the dusty plains, or when you're floating on a raft in the middle of international waters waiting for your GPS to kick on. How's the GPS looking, Drew?
Not very good.
So let's take a break. We'll be right back with the second half of the show. We're going to talk about a lot of shit, so I hope you stick around. Where else are you going to go? You got nothing else to do.
Welcome to the Quest Bowl.
I do like the applause. The applause helps make me feel better.
Does it?
Yeah, it does.
A little bit of false gratification.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, people are enjoying the show, I think, somehow. And if they could, they would applaud us, right? They would applaud the effort, at least, that we would put out.
I hope so.
Maybe they do more of the polite applause.
Like, good job.
Yeah,
guys.
Like you did a little bit of effort, I guess. You know, they don't have golf clap on here, so. Thank you for listening to the show. Welcome back. This is the second half. Welcome to the Crespo Dome, as you heard. Let's get the plugs out of the way. Drew, tell people where they can find you on the interwebs.
Yeah, at antihero419 on Twitter and Instagram.
And definitely check him out, follow him, and hit up the show on Twitter at CrespoDiso. Hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Same thing on Instagram is CinemaCrespoDiso as well. And then hit me up on Twitter at IamChrisCrespo. Still got open spots for the Fantasy Baseball League. Hit me up with that on Twitter. You can hit me up there. Or you can email the show, CinemaCrespoDiso@gmail.com. Hey, and I want to plug the bonus episodes. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, ChrisCrespo.com, wherever one of those places. However you listen to your podcast, I'll listen to the show and check out the bonus episodes. We just released a new Dr. Drew's Two Cents episode about nothingness, and I think it's one of the best bonus episodes we've done, Drew, because we've been doing these bonus eps now for like 4 months, and I gotta say, it was a good choice of topic. You had a lot of good info. I think that was one of our best ones, dude.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, good. So, good job.
Thank you.
All right. So download that. Check it out. Also, check out the Crespo Disco, where we talk about our favorite cover songs. And check out the latest CCN, where I rant and rave about how the rest of the country is crazy. I got to be picking on Florida country just because we have better weather than you. And you're stuck in that shit weather with the Arctic winds now being... Hey, Drew, you know how like in the Arctic Circle is warmer than ever, than has been in a long time? So it's pushing an Arctic jet stream even further south. So instead of hitting just Canada, it's also hitting our country.
Sweet.
So while the rest of the world during the winter are recording record high temperatures and less snowfall than ever,
we're getting record lows.
We're getting record lows and getting destroyed by this Arctic blast that comes through that conveniently misses Florida, leaves us in our subtropic loving lifestyle. So hey,
So we're chilling with the rest of the world during the winter.
Yeah, the rest of the world, they're baking. They're like, what the hell? Where is the snow? They're freaking out. We're like, yeah, this is it. This is the subtropics. This is why we're here.
Exactly.
Know? So, take that world.
So, wait, so you're telling me the rest of the world's getting warmer?
But
United States is getting colder?
2013 was one of the highest, it's a trend that's going up, one of the highest years ever on record for since we've been recording the world temperatures.
So everywhere in the world is getting warmer.
Yeah.
And America
is getting colder.
During
the winters. And then during the summers, remember last summer there was record heat waves?
Yeah, it was awesome. People were dying.
It was over the hundreds. And again, where that Arctic jet stream is, it was over hundreds across the country, but not in here. It's still in the 90s. It's just like it always is. You know? It's weird how it gets hotter.
Florida's awesome.
Places. Yeah, Florida.
It's a good place
awesome.
To be.
Hashtag Florida. Right? Drew loves it when people speak with hashtags in real life conversations.
It makes me so angry. What am I going to do? Am I going to like scream out hashtag this and all of a sudden I get a list of all the people who said hashtag that day?
Hashtag Oscars 2014. We are recording at Oscars.
Hashtag
bonus.
You're fucking stupid.
That's a good hashtag. You should remember that one.
Yeah.
We're doing an Oscar bonus episode. It's our second one. We did one last year. Remember that, Drew?
Yeah, we broke even.
We did
even
break
with
even.
My handicap.
That was fun. That was so.
I'm still going to need a wicked handicap. I missed a lot of the Oscar nominated movies this year.
You did, but you've seen more movies now in the last year. So that
just,
handicap.
Just because I've seen. But it wasn't because I'd seen lack of movies. It's last year's because I'd seen lack of Oscar nominated movies. Same as this year, dude.
Yeah, but you've had your chance, and like we've done the show together, you've heard the news, you know how movies are generally more received now than you were a year ago. I'm just arguing that you are more informed than you were last year, so the handicap needs to be adjusted.
Okay.
Last year I gave you a +6, I remember that.
Okay.
I'm willing to, let's do some negotiating, because there's going to be a bet some sort of bet on the line.
I'll take a +4.
+4? You'll take, really?
I'll take the +4.
All right.
No need to negotiate.
Negotiation over.
Yeah.
Well, no, +4.
I'll take a +4.
This guy's got the balls. I like it. So we're going to have our ballots. I'll go ahead and print them out today so you can go ahead and start looking at them. We can both figure out what we're going to do. We'll record that, release it on probably Wednesday night, midnight, and the Oscars will be this upcoming weekend. So this is episode 59. We're recording the Oscars, or when we're recording episode 60. So episode 61 will be our Oscars recap.
And what, it'll be a week after?
Pretty much a week after. Same thing we did last year. I don't think it's worth doing a bonus episode just to recap the winners, because that's something we can do in like 10 minutes on the show.
I mean, unless, you know, we go live by then.
If they have the station up and we're live, yeah, then we could do it. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't How much more time would we could be? Oh, man, I hope we can be live. I don't think we'll be, though.
No, of course not.
This pipe Monday dreams, coming bro. Up, no.
Those are pipe dreams.
Soon, though. Soon we'll be able to do it. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. So, Oscar show coming up. Exciting. Woo! Here we go. Let me check my notes. Where are my notes saying? What are we supposed to be doing here? Drew, what are we supposed to be doing?
I don't know. You tell me. You don't look at the notes.
We watched that. All right. Well, first, real quick. 15 years ago this past week, Gene Siskel passed away.
Oh.
Yeah. So, old Siskel and Ebert. Roger Ebert died just last year. All right, I think it was. The great Siskel and Ebert. I would like to reflect real quick on the legacy. But, I mean, they're the ones that put a public face on film critics. You know, they were the pudgy, not good-looking guys who they somehow got a local show on Chicago TV, and it got syndicated across the entire country, and people fell in love with...
thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up, thumbs down. Little fat Roger Ebert, tall, bald, goofy-looking Gene Siskel, and the way they argued with each other. Roger Ebert was more of the highbrow, arty guy.
Yep.
Gene Siskel was more of the critic of the people type of thing, you know? And it was interesting. What they contributed to cinema is actually pretty almost incalculable, because they introduced the idea of public discourse about cinema, about movies as an art form, you know, but as a tangible one. Even mainstream movies, they can talk about in certain ways, and it showed people that's how you can do that. You can compare movies like that and, you know, talk about actors and directors and their bodies of work. They put that on TV. This is back in, what, the 80s?
Yeah.
Good golly, before internet and stuff. So good for them. I mean, Siskel and Ebert, shout outs. Pouring one out for the homies. One passed 15 years ago last week. Ebert, pretty recently. Right?
Yeah, yep.
That's some crazy shit there. We watched that Guardians of the Galaxy trailer.
Yeah, yes, we did.
If you haven't seen that, go ahead and pause the show right now. Go to YouTube. Guardians of the Galaxy. Check it out, and we'll wait for you. We'll be here when you get back.
Right? Yep. Yeah, what's up, dude? How's it going?
I'm doing all right. I'm drinking this beer here. A little stressed about this boat situation.
Oh, dude, it's okay. We got the new boat. It's coming.
The new boat's coming, I know, but it's got to get here soon.
I just got to get the keys for the boat, dude. I just got to talk to the dude to get the keys.
Boat's gotta
we
got to
give him some money.
It's got to get tugboated out here, because it's not going to work until we actually get on there. We have to do some fixing up to get it working.
Wait a second.
Because what I'm saying, it's not operational right now.
You think we're hopping on this new boat straight from the water? Dope. We gotta get to land.
I don't know.
They're meeting us at land.
No, they're bringing the boat out here.
No.
Aren't they? Well, how are we gonna get to land? We cut up the paddle woods and used them for a campfire last night for the marshmallows.
That was a poor decision on our part.
But the marshmallows were so good.
They were, but you know, we meet them on land, bro. It's gonna be a while. And you're back.
Welcome back. Thank you for. I hope you enjoyed that trailer. Guardians of the Galaxy. It's a weird trailer.
It is. It's wacky.
Obviously, it's hopefully reflecting the tone of the movie.
I really hope it's going to be this kind of action, space, comedy, weird nonsense that it looks like it's going to be.
I'm totally behind Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Rocket Raccoon? Yeah. Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Rocket Raccoon looks cool. Looks like a lot of fun.
He does.
You know who does the voice?
I want the toy.
Yeah.
Already, I want the toy.
That's like a fun toy. You know who does the voice of Rocket Raccoon?
Who?
No idea? You want to take a guess?
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
He's done a few David Russell movies now.
Just tell me.
He's Bradley Cooper.
Awesome.
Here's the hint. Here's the hint. He's Bradley Cooper.
Awesome. Great hint, dude. Thanks for the hint.
So he's the voice of Rocket Raccoon. I don't know if they've done any sort of like motion capture, or if he just did the voice straight up or what.
Who knows?
They got that Bautista guy, David Bautista, the wrestler. He's the just some big dude.
Yep. He's a big dude.
As always, Saldana is some green chick.
Yep.
Proving that she's hot in both green form and blue form.
Correct.
And what's it? Oh. They got giant tree man.
Yes.
Who is voiced by Vin Diesel.
So he's going to be grumbling a lot.
And you be talking like this.
Hanging out. That's more of a Stallone.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Rocket Raccoon. They're going to make a fun team.
Yes, they will.
And then Chris Pratt from Parks and Rec.
Yep.
As Star-Lord. which is pretty funny when he's like talking to Star-Lord. People are like,
yeah, who?
It's kind of like a
Star-Lord.
It's like a Lone Star Spaceballs type of thing.
Totally.
Like, Lone Star. It looks fun. Looks like
it does.
Looks sardonic. Looks interesting.
It's ridiculous.
One quick shot in the trailer of Benicio del Toro.
Yes.
Super quick.
As the collector.
The collector, yes. And he's super creepy looking.
Yes.
He's
so well, at least he's not just a giant head with arms and legs like he is in the comic books.
Yes, he's an actual person. That's cool. We don't need giant arm and legs.
No. And head. No, just giant head. Tiny arm and legs. Yeah, giant head.
Very strange. James Gunn's an interesting director. He did Super and Slither and a lot of really low budgets, like splattery, crazy, like R-rated movies.
So he knows how to have fun.
He does know how to have fun. So it'll be crazy to see how he does with the big budget Marvel thing. It's crazy to give him so much money, you know?
I hope he has fun.
I hope he does. Marvel's making some interesting decisions by giving James Gunn Guardians of the Galaxy. They gave Edgar Wright Ant-Man.
Yeah.
They've been running with that for years, and now that's actually happening. So, man.
Nope.
No.
It's time.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy looks cool, right? We both agree?
Agreed.
All right, time for a Drewster Cogburn versus the world. Drewster Cogburn versus the world. Drewster Cogburn versus the world. All right, here we go.
God, you really need to get some sort of professional recording for that.
You just sound
so god awful.
I just professionally recorded ourselves.
So god awful.
I know what's going on here. I know.
You're tone deaf, bro. You can't sing for shit.
I can sing.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
Uh-uh. That is a lie.
You don't think I can sing?
Nope.
I can sing like a bird.
Disagree.
You know what? You disagree?
Yes, I disagree.
Well. See, I'm pretty good. See, I can do
yeah, well, screw you.
That was me. That was all me.
That's awesome. Good for you. You can kind of beatbox. You still can't sing for shit.
That was all me. All right.
Can I get a second opinion? Can this guy sing? That's what I thought. Well, we got a big thumbs down on our second opinion.
This guy doesn't know. He doesn't know. What are you talking about? Get out of here. Okay, let's pull this up here. All right, we got our DCVTW this week. Hashtag DCVTW. Drew Scott versus World Sparring Round. Well, I guess when we get the new boat, at least we can get a guest in here. I kind of miss having guests. Now it's been a few weeks without guests. We need to get one in here pretty soon. But right now, Drew, you ready for the sparring round?
Yeah.
It's kind of it's February. It's the end of February. We had a bunch of those stupid romantic movies come out.
Oh, God, they're so awful.
Not really any romantic comedies. Not too many of those, actually. But I got a game here. It's a Rotten Tomatoes score game. You know those. I'm going to tell you the movie. You tell me which one has the higher Rotten Tomatoes score.
Oh, yeah. I know how this works.
This is the romantic comedy edition, the rom-com edition. So here we go. Number one. Which one has a better Rotten Tomatoes score? Ghosts of Girlfriends Past or How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days? Both of them starring Matthew McConaughey.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days has a score of 42%. Ghosts of Girlfriends Past, 26%. So
nice.
There you go. All right. There's one there. Number two, higher score, The Ugly Truth or The Backup Plan? Ugly Truth with Katherine Heigl, Backup Plan with J-Lo.
Backup Plan.
Backup Plan with J-Lo had a score of 18%. Ugly Truth had a score of 13%.
Yes.
Good job, Drew. Hey, buddy, here we go. Number three, which had a better score, Made in Manhattan? That's J-Lo and Ralph Fiennes. Or Little Black Book, Brittany Murphy, Holly Hunter movie with Ron Livingston. Magical powerhouse that is Ron Livingston. Made in Manhattan or Little Black Book?
Sure. Made in Manhattan?
Made in Manhattan had a score of 39%. Little Black Book, 21%. Drew is 3 for 3. You know your rom-coms, buddy. Number four, here we go.
I have yet to actually have watched any of these movies you talked about.
I've seen one of them so far. Number four, which has a better score? Serendipity, that is Matt Cabin-Matt's favorite movie. He loves that film. Go ahead and tweet him at Matt's Cabin if you love Serendipity. Or America's Sweethearts, both movies with John Cusack. Which one has a better score, Serendipity or America's Sweethearts?
America's Sweethearts?
Serendipity had a score of 58%.
Oh, that sounds like the winner.
America's Sweethearts, 31%.
Yeah.
There you go. Right. I finally got one wrong. Number five, which had a higher score, High Fidelity, another John Cusack joint.
That I've seen.
Or You've Got Mail. With Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan, and Dave Chappelle.
Ooh, man. I'm going with T. Hanks, man.
You've Got Mail has a score of 69%. That's the highest one we've had so far. High Fidelity has a score of 91%.
Oh!
All right, here we go. Number six, which has a higher score. Shaun of the Dead. Or, speaking of Edgar Wright, Shaun of the Dead. Or, When Harry Met Sally. When Harry Met Sally has a score of 88%. God damn. Shaun of the Dead has a score of 91%.
Oh!
Crazy. So the 3 for 3. Now we're actually talking about movies you've seen.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You're better when you don't know. Number 7. Higher score. Rotten Tomatoes. What Women Want. With Mel Gibson. That's the one where he knows all the thoughts of women. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, I remember the trailers.
Or Hitch. With Will Smith and Kevin James.
Let's go Hitch.
Hitch has a score of 69%.
Uh-huh.
Will Smith power. What Women Want, Mel Gibson, 54%.
He doesn't have that Will Smith power.
So he does not know he has that Mel Gibson power, which is not as hefty. Number 8, Runaway Brides. That's Julia Roberts and Richard Gere. Or Mr. Deeds, the Adam Sandler. Drew Barrymore?
Not Mr. Deeds.
Winona Ryder. Not Mr. Deeds?
Not Mr. Deeds.
Runaway Bride has a score of 46%, whereas Mr. Deeds has a score of 22%, so very good. Good job. Number 9, let's wrapping it up. Coming to America, Eddie Murphy, obviously. Or Failure to Launch, another McConaughey.
Coming to America.
Coming to America, 68%. To Failure to Launch is 24%. First off, that was too easy. I should not have said put those two together. Second off, 68% on Coming to America.
And I think it'd be higher.
Too low. Too low. And finally, number 10, higher Rotten Tomatoes score. What Happens in Vegas with Ashton Kutcher and Cameron Diaz? Or Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Forgetting Sarah Marshall has an 84% score. Whereas,
it's actually quite good.
No, it is actually pretty good. Whereas What Happens in Vegas is a piece of shit and has a score of 27%. Mm. So, yeah, definitely fucked up on those last two ones. Should have flip-flopped some of those movies. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 10. Hey, that's your best showing in a while, dude.
I'm passing.
You're passing. We're going to get you pretty soon. We're going to get you like 8, 9 out of 10 on the reg, and then we're really bringing Clubber Lang, and you're going to take them on and knock them out. All Rocky style.
Heard that we are Clubber Lang.
We are Clubber Lang. All right, let's Guardians of the Galaxy. We're done with that. Have you heard about the casting for Fantastic Four?
No, I have not.
They cast it. The new Fantastic Four movie is a reboot. It's being done by the guy who did Chronicle, Josh Trank. They cast the four your four guys. You know, so let's see who
do we got?
Who we got? Who are the characters? Who are they?
Human Torch.
Human Torch.
Johnny Blaze.
I'm loving the casting. I love it. Michael B. Jordan.
Ooh, he's going black.
They went black with Johnny Blaze. Michael B. Jordan, great actor.
The Invisible Woman.
Which is his sister, right?
Yeah.
Kate Mara, the chick from House of Cards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the young chick from House of Cards who's Rudy Mara's sister.
Yeah. Okay, so then who's Reed? Richards, Mr. Fantastic. Senor Fantastic.
Richard Reed, Reed Richards? Is it Richard Reed or Reed Richards?
Reed Richards.
Richard Reed sounds like it should be his name.
It does.
Reed Richards is played by Miles Teller. That's our homeboy from The Spectacular Now. And it was just in that awkward moment with our Human Torch, Michael B. Jordan.
Okay, and then who is the Thing?
Who is the Thing? You see how young we're going with this cast?
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Are you ready for the Thing? The guy who's playing the Thing is the guy who has experience with motion capture.
Okay.
And it's Jamie Bell. Look up Jamie Bell on the Google. You'll recognize him. He was Jamie Bell. I always liked the guy because he was in a David Gordon Green movie, Undertow. He's really good in that. But he did the motion capture for Tintin and the Adventures of Tintin? He did the motion capture
Let's
for
adventure
that.
Du Tintin.
So he has the experience already to do that. So they're obviously going with motion capture CG for the Thing because he's a smaller fellow.
Oh, this guy.
Jamie Bell, that guy. Yes, you recognize him, right? He's been in a bunch of things. He's been in stuff.
He has been in stuff.
So they're going with a younger cast there, which I think, you know, hey, you're the comic book guy. What do you think of the younger rebooted Fantastic Four?
I mean, it's going to be interesting. We'll see. I mean, they tried to kind of do a younger reboot with it last time.
No, they got the Ian Gruffalo guy that got for Mr. Fantastic. He was like in his 30s or 40s. Like, I felt like he was an older dude, you know.
Jessica Alba was not older. And neither
she was in
her
20s. Chris Evans was in his 20s.
Neither was Captain America.
And then, but then they so got chick, but then they got Chiklis for the thing.
So the Human Torch is so Captain
America.
So
he's like in his 40s.
But the Human Torch is Captain America.
Yeah. There's that whole thing, and then Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool was
Deadpool
Green
is the Green Lantern. You are correct.
Yeah, shit happens. Crazy shit happens. Like, yeah, man, it's a crazy world of cinema, man. You know, it's so wild. I think I'm very interested by that.
I think it's gonna be fun.
I think it's gonna be cool. I really like that director. I'm a big fan of Chronicles, so I'm hoping it's gonna be a lot of fun. That those Fantastic Four movies, even though those movies were directed by Tim Story, friend of the show, cool Carl Verna.
Yeah.
The video.
I mean,
Verna.
You know,
I'm sure Tim Story's listening. Tim Story, shout out
the start. You know, the origin story of the Fantastic Four is actually a lot like Chronicle, kind of.
Yeah, it's an experiment. They're going to outer space.
Cosmic
and they find
rays.
Something, cosmic rays, and they change the
color.
Yeah, it is pretty similar. This outer space thing affects them. But it's much more sudden than for Fantastic Four.
Yes.
All of a sudden, he's super stretchy, man. You know? Yep. In Chronicle, they had to build up to. Anyway. So there we go. We talked about. I guess that's our comic book corner. Real quick, Guardians of the Galaxy trailer and then Fantastic Four casting. We wanted to get that out of the way there because I think people are interested in that kind of stuff.
You know? Oh, yeah.
The Marvel movies are big money, huge money. And even though Fantastic Four, that's actually a Fox, but still, comic book movie, right? I got a couple of stories. What do you want to hear first? You want to hear about the new upcoming national, like global force in animation? Or do you want to talk about this trend of Christian exploitation movies we got this year? What do you want to start with?
Let's start off with the Christian exploitation.
Christian exploitation. I'll start with this article here. This is from brandchannel.com. Hollywood gears up for a slew of religious releases.
Son of God.
But for what audience? Yes, Son of God is money. Here we go.
Newer.
And this is actually a pretty interesting article. Brandchannel.com. A mounting drama around the modern story of Noah, $130 million retelling. I've read 120. Now it's up to 130.
Awesome.
So, man, that's crazy.
Good for Darren. Spend that money, bro.
Right. $130 million retelling of the Old Testament's builder of the Ark from Paramount Pictures goes back to November of 2013. Then, test audiences leaked descriptions of the film that worried Christian leaders due to its interpretive retelling of Noah's story, including themes of environmentalism. I don't understand why you're going to be like, Christians are hating. That doesn't make any sense. The cheers and jeers are only about to get louder in the U.S. as the film is about to see a flood of faith. In the U.S. is about to see a flood of faith-themed films that is going to severely test some long-held beliefs about Hollywood, godliness, and who has the power to motivate lucrative Christian audiences. There's been that whole thing for a while about Hollywood is the, you know, they have the gay characters, yep, and they're indoctrinating our youth with all these liberal agendas. They're all atheists, a bunch of potheads over there, drug users, that whole stigma against Hollywood films. But here we go. We got a whole bunch of these faith-based movies coming out. Noah, due out March 28th. Here's another. All right. I think we might have talked about this before. The faith-driven consumer survey found that 98% of its supporters were not satisfied with Hollywood's take on religious stories such as Noah. That's what they said. The exact question reads, how would you answer this question if you were a Christian person taking on an obviously faith-based quiz? This is not his question's word. As a faith-driven consumer,
which I am,
are you satisfied with a biblically themed movie designed to appeal to you, which replaces the Bible's core message with one created by Hollywood?
What the hell kind of question is that?
No, right? So, of course, 98% of people are going to say, no, I don't want to, replace. What does that mean, though?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to replace the real message with Hollywood's evil message.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what that's implying, right? Meanwhile, there's no indication that Noah has done that. Probably all the main themes and points are still in there. So it's a little imaginative in the way it's done.
It may probably a little dark.
So that, like you said, it's a loaded fucking question.
Yeah.
But this is weird. This is what I want to eventually point out. Let's see if we can get to that. Paramount Pictures obviously hit back against the survey. It came from this dude. You got to think about the source, right? It's faith. What is it called? Faith Driven Consumer is the name of the group, right? And then there's this other guy. What's the Bill Nye the Science Guy thing that just happened?
What about it?
You hear about that? Debated that dude, the creationist guy. That group is called Answers in Genesis. That guy's name is Ken Ham, And last November, he actually wrote a slam on Noah. And it's called Don't Be Taken In by the Noah Movies promotion. His screed against the film covers many accusations, with them all adding up to a summary of Noah as a, quote, Hollywood con. So, people are already coming out against this movie. Christian leaders have been trying to sabotage this movie amongst their Christian audience now since last November, which is kind of the point. If Noah is in fact a good biblical film from a big studio and a director outside the faith community, then it's an open challenge to a belief system that has been unquestioned in the Christian right for decades, or at least since 1988's The Last Temptation of Christ, a film whose release resulted in a terrorist attack on a Paris theater by Christian fundamentalists. There was a crazy brouhaha when that movie came out. Because they're like, what if Jesus was a dude who like lusted after hookers and stuff?
He was and he did.
Yeah, so...
I mean, listen to the story. It spells it right out there for you.
People don't like being reminded of that.
Yeah. He fell in love with a prostitute.
Here's the thing. Noah
good
is,
for you, buddy.
Right, I mean, hey, you know, sometimes that happens.
Hooker with a heart of gold, man.
Hooker with a heart of gold. They're out there. Here's what happens. It's really all about how these Christian audiences that they're trying to court, they don't want to see a retelling of these stories. They don't want
want the literal interpretation.
They want to see it pulled from the book and up on the screen, even though they might not know the whole story. Like we pointed out before, how people apparently got upset about how in the Noah, there's a scene where Russell Crowe, as Noah, he goes off and gets drunk by himself.
Uh-huh.
And people are like, this movie portrays Noah as a drunk. What's wrong with him? Blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, actually in the Bible, it's in there. It says that after the whole Noah thing, spoiler alert, after the flood and Noah survives, spoiler, the waters recede, he goes off into a cave somewhere and he gets drunk because he has a survivor's guilt.
Good for him.
You know, he's suffering PTSD from all that
shit.
Yeah,
pretty much.
And people are flipped out. Like, what are they showing Noah drunk for?
Well, read the Bible.
That's your literal jerk interpretation. Off. Exactly. You just can't please some people, man.
Well, yeah, I love most of the people who are running and ranting, saying that this isn't taken straight from the Bible. Mm-hmm. Most of them have not read a single word.
Not in a while, anyway. They read it when they were a kid, and then they just show up to the church on Sunday. No, someone reads it to them from the pulpit.
No. Someone has read it to them. They have not actually opened it and read it.
That's how the Catholics got away with it so long. The Bible was only available in Latin forever.
Yes.
Who spoke Latin?
Nobody. The only the people in the church.
So we told them, we're going to tell you what this is because you can't read it.
Uh-huh.
And then Martin Luther was like, yeah, maybe we should translate these guys.
Maybe we should all figure out what it really says.
So people want more of the literal translation like Passion of the Christ, which made a shit ton of money, like $600 million worldwide, because that was very literal. This is in the Bible, so here's a snuff.
Yes.
We're
killing Jesus on the screen.
Or they'll take movies that are not based on the Bible but have Christian themes. Think of stuff like 2011's Courageous, is a movie with Kirk Cameron and Fireproof, where he's like a fireman doubting his
anything
faith
with
or
Kirk
whatever.
Cameron.
He is a very devout Christian, very open about it. He's been teaming with this church in Albany, Georgia called Sherwood Baptist Church. And they make these movies. Like they made Fireproof for $500,000 with Kirk Cameron. That one ended up making $33 million.
Yep.
So when you make a movie for less than a million and it makes $33 million,
yep,
you're doing pretty good. That's how they ended up making that Courageous movie in 2011. There's a production company in Canada called Cloud 10 Pictures. They're the ones behind that Left Behind series.
Yeah.
So people love that shit, you know, but they don't want you taking a story that's already out there and reinterpreting it. Now, with that being said, think of this. It's more than just big money for church groups. It's also a version of proselytization and outreach, something that successful Hollywood-produced Christian-themed movies could threaten. For instance, February 27th, we'll see the opening of the film Son of God.
Son of God.
The film is backed in part by California's Saddleback megachurch pastor, Rick Warren. I've heard that name, Rick Warren. And Reverend Sam Rodriguez, the president of the Hispanic Evangelical Alliance, probably another pretty big group out there in California. Warren, who is calling Son of God the best film about Jesus in the past 50 years, is buying out screens in at least 8 theaters to create a, quote, audience bomb. And that's when a shit ton of people see a movie at the same time. Think the opening weekend of the first Spider-Man movie, mm-hmm, when it made $100 million opening weekend and blew people's minds. Yeah. Avengers, $200 million opening weekend. Those are audience bombs. They're trying to manufacture one by buying out theaters in their areas, right? Yeah. Devout Christian and legendary producer Mark Burnett who is also behind the History Channel blockbuster series The Bible, as well
that's
as...
That's where this movie's cut from.
Which is where this cut from. And he also got his money from, like, Survivor and stuff like that, which is still on TV. Is on record calling the film a chance to, quote, funnel people into churches. There's yet another film opening prior to Noah that aims at Christian outreach that could be used to explain the challenges facing the film. Opening March 21st is the small-budget God's Not Dead, a film about a college student whose faith is challenged by a philosophy professor who does not believe in God. The film stars Kevin Sorbo and Dean Cain. Drew's face just went slack from the idea of a Hercules and Superman teaming up to make a faith-based movie about debating the existence of God. The film is advanced by two stars who are very comfortable speaking openly about their Christianity. It also doesn't hurt the film's chances that Duck Dynasty stars Willie and Corey Robertson appear in the film. So talk about knowing your audience, man, and really selling it hard. A more mainstream, but still faith-based entry will be April's Heaven Is For Real. Have you seen that trailer?
No.
With Greg Kinnear?
No.
It's about his, it's based on a book. It's about his son dies. His little son dies, like a 7-8-year-old kid. Has an accident, dies, is dead for 7 minutes, and then when he comes back, he has the whole religious experience. I saw the light. I was hanging out with this guy who said he was my, I was hanging out with my grandfather.
I was tripping balls on DMT.
And then he starts describing all these people he could never have met or something. So here you go. More mainstream movie, but still faith-based entry will be April's Heaven Is For Real, based on the New York Times bestselling book of the same name. The film from Sony Pictures stars Greg Kinnear and Kelly Riley, both much more familiar faces to general audiences. So they're going that route, too, kind of like the Fireproof Courageous thing, where it's movies that are they're trying to get that Christian audience without necessarily pulling from the Bible and trying to reinterpret stuff like they may be doing with Noah. We haven't seen it yet. Only a few people have seen it. And that leads us to this. Whatever the results of Noah, the one that maybe stands to benefit the most is 20th Century Fox. That studio is set to release Exodus at the end of 2014. The film, by Ridley Scott, tells the biblical epic of Moses, who is played by...
A black guy.
No.
Damn it.
A Welshman.
Okay, sure.
Christian Bale. Christian Bale is your Moses in Ridley Scott's... Exodus. In a world...
In a world where Batman parts the Red Sea.
Yeah. But it's going to be more than that, because the Exodus story is
post
all that stuff. That's the Ten Commandments. Exodus, about the 40 years wandering the desert, all that crazy shit. That's actually pretty cool.
No, the Exodus is the parting of the Red Sea.
They part the Red Sea to get into the desert. Yes. And then the Exodus is when they're exiled to the desert, and they wander the desert for 40 years. The original tribe that left Egypt and escaped, the original people, they all had to die out, every single one of them, and only their kin could move on into Canaan, into the promised land. I remember that story. It was a good story.
Awesome.
Yeah. So actually, I am looking forward to that movie. Will it be more literal? Reinterpret some stuff?
I want plagues.
Plagues are fun. Plagues are cool. You can always watch The Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, Yul Brynner.
Yeah, people go.
There you go, man. Yeah. Meanwhile, the whole idea of audience bombs. Son of God, churches, religious groups snap up almost 500,000 tickets in weeks before Christ film debut. This is from The Hollywood Reporter. Film charity Compassion International tells The Hollywood Reporter it bought 225,000 seats in 40 cities. Jerry Falwell's Liberty University is giving thousands of tickets away. So you got these groups that are actively trying to make this movie a big deal. Even though, like you said, it is just cut down from a 10-hour miniseries.
Good for them.
Which I only saw a little bit of that miniseries on TV.
I watched the whole thing.
You watched the whole thing, so I saw a little bit of it in the background. When I watched, I thought it looked like a cheap piece of shit. I thought it was pretty stupid.
It was.
So we want to give a quick review we never talked about on the show. What did you think of the Bible miniseries? Because people loved it.
It wasn't that impressive. Impressed? It was what it was. It told the story and blah, this, blah, that. Yeah, Jesus was a guy, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it just hit the main points. Didn't get into any of the dirty stuff.
Right.
You know, he still goes from a freaking a baby to a grown-ass man, and there's nothing in between.
Nah.
So, it's lame. It pisses me off the same way that, you know, Christianity does in general.
You can listen to Dr. Drew's 2 cents for a little more about that, and nothingness, and all the eternal oblivion. That was fun. That was a good time. There was, I think it was in this article. Yes, here we go. Johnny Moore. He is the Liberty University, which is a big Christian university. I think it's in Virginia somewhere. Liberty University Senior VP Communications dude, Johnny Moore. He told The Hollywood Reporter, "We think it's an extraordinary product, and for Christianity, we think it's a historic moment. This is the first movie about the life of Jesus in 50 years. It would be beneficial to people all across the country to see this on the big screen." This guy, who is a major player over at Liberty University, a Christian university, seems to think that this movie, Son of God, is the first Jesus movie in about 50 years. He's thinking back to most likely the greatest story ever told.
Yeah.
Which is from the 60s.
Uh-huh.
You know what I love about our current internet age, dude? You know what I enjoy?
How many Jesus movies are there, Chris?
I enjoy the research and how quickly you can pull up Google and just destroy someone's... All right, so here we go. We got... In 2006, I'm just going to go in order and got here. Color of the Cross is a film distributed by 20th Century Fox. Feature-length movie, religious film, written, directed, and starring one guy, Jean-Claude Lamar. The film is one of the few depictions of Christ as a black man and portrays Jesus' persecution as a result of racism.
Sweet.
So there you go. It's pretty straight up, except that they focus more on the on his race, you know? Let's see. We also got... a movie called, this is a Canada production called The Gospel of John. And actually, I remember this coming out in theaters in 2003 film that is a story of Jesus' life as recounted by the Gospel of John. And it's just a literal, they took the whole, that one book, not Mark, not Matthew, not Luke, they just did John. And they made that into a movie. That was 2003, so already, you know, just the last couple of years, there's already two movies. Not even counting, we already talked about Passion of the Christ, right? One of the biggest things ever.
Yep.
I don't know if you want to count it, but Jesus of Nazareth, you ever see that? It was an Italian miniseries, but they did everything in Aramaic.
Yeah.
You know, and they sold that as a three VHS set in the 80s and 90s. Got that whole thing from 77. Last Temptation of Christ. No one wants to talk about that one because even though it's...
Because Willem Dafoe is Jesus.
Willem Dafoe is Jesus. And even though I hate the white Jesus, that was still... Willem Dafoe's Jesus is a lot of fun. But white Jesus is, you know, we don't need white Jesus.
Yeah, no.
That's right there. There's a whole bunch of movies about Jesus in just the last decade. And this guy's like, there hasn't been one in 50 years.
Well, he's stupid.
He is pretty stupid. So there you go. Religious movies coming out this year. If you're a Christian, load them up. Christian sportation. They got to get that money somehow. You want to take a guess, Drew, who's going to be the next global force in animation? Which country is coming up big? And this is according to CartoonBrew.com, so they know their cartoons.
Canada.
Not Canada. No. Let me give you, you want a hint?
No.
No hint. All right, take another guess.
Yes.
You want a hint? Right near the beach, boy!
Jamaica!
Can Jamaica become a force in global animation? Again, CartoonBrew.com. Animation may not be the first thing that pops to mind when you hear the name Jamaica, but the Caribbean island of nearly 3 million people is making an effort to position itself as a player in the global animation industry. 2 weeks ago, 43 students graduated from the inaugural class of Animate Jamaica, a 6-month certificate program of the Caribbean Institute of Media and Communication. There you go. Look at this guy here getting a certificate.
Hey, man.
Hey, man. That's totally a Jamaican.
I'm wearing a totally white suit, man.
Well, yeah. If you
let's go smoke a spliff.
Oh, they have a celebratory spliff. Yeah, now that they're doing the animation. So we're talking about the, you know how they, like the Simpsons, they get their cheap animation out of Korea.
Yeah.
You know, they mention, what other countries? India, the Philippines. These are places where they have animation set up. They have the resources and the manpower and the money to be able to crank out this stuff for American product and other countries, too.
Yeah.
Jamaica has already been, they already been doing stuff.
Yeah.
All right, we got nearly two-thirds of the graduating students of these 43 people have already been guaranteed work, in part due to the Jamaican studio Real Rock GSW. So they call their studio Real Rock, man. Real Rock GSW.
Hey, man.
Which was a major backer of the Animate Jamaica program. First time I read this article, it's called Animate Jamaica, but for some reason when I read it, I wanted to say Animate. I was like, Animate Jamaica.
Animate Jamaica.
Is that some sort of Jamaican patois they don't know about?
Yep.
Animate Jamaica, man. But yeah, this studio signed a co-production deal last year with French animation outfit Red Frog to produce 13 episodes of Quiz Time for Disney Junior France. The success of that production has led to an even bigger co-production on 52 episodes of the Disney Channel Nickelodeon series Lucky Fred. So they're already
doing stuff.
They're already doing stuff. This is in conjunction with Spain's Amira Entertainment. So they're
España.
They got deals with American companies, French companies, and they just literally got started. So the whole idea is that now people are shocked by the speed that they managed to get this up with. They've had some good backers. Apparently, they had an animation conference in Jamaica last year called the Kingstoon Animation Conference. In Kingston, Jamaica. Kingstoon. And and they've been working also with Montreal-based Toon Boom. They've been involved from the beginning, backing Animate Jamaica and providing support to Rio Rock. So, hey, Jamaica's really, what are they known for? Tourism and smoking weed, right?
Yep.
They're not known for anything else.
The bobsled team.
And the bobsled team, which came in last. Dead last. 6 seconds behind the leading team. And then bobsled, might as well not even shown up.
Hey, they're just having fun.
Hey, man, we made it to the bobsled.
Exactly.
Senka Coffee, that's the guy's name in Cold Runnings. I did love that movie. Great movie. But, you know, now they're developing. They've found a way to create an industry almost out of nowhere. In the last 2 years ago, there was no animation industry in Jamaica. Not only have in that time, had to create one out of nowhere. Now they have a bunch of qualified people over there. They got money, they got support, and they got deals. They got jobs that's going to bring in more money. It's a pretty poverty-stricken country.
Yeah.
3 million people. Most of them are living in the shit. So, hey, this will help a lot of them get out. This will give people something to strive for over there in Jamaica. Animation. Entertainment.
Learn
to draw with a computer. And that's going to help boost an entire country, an entire economy out of this shit. So I think that's pretty awesome. The power of cinema right there. And as well as television and mostly children's entertainment, actually.
So is it going to be sad when there are tiny children drawing the children's animation made by children?
They make t-shirts in China?
For children by children?
We'll see. It could be sad. We could make a documentary about that. A short film that win many awards and not give that money to any of the kids. Got a few questions here. At Matt Celery had a question. A good one, too. Favorite movie shot in Florida? I wanted to pull that up real quick. Can you do a Google search, Drew, real quick? Just do movies shot or movies filmed in Florida. I can think of a few off the top of my head, but if we can get a quick list.
I know a couple.
Can you think of a couple right away? What can you think of right away?
One of the the Walking Dead series. Not the Walking Dead, Night of the Living Dead series.
Day of the Dead.
Yeah, one of those was shot in Sarasota.
Yes, it was. Which was interesting. It's only, most of that movie is actually underground, so you only see Sarasota in that opening shot in downtown, you know. But that's mid-80s Sarasota, which is
films cool. Shot in Florida.
All right, let's hear some of these movies.
Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, okay, South Florida, probably. Yeah scenes.
Two-Headed Shark Attack.
Okay, all right.
Ace Ventura.
Detective. That's shot in Miami. That's right. Ace Ventura, great. That's great. Wild Things. Wild Things is the movie that I shot in Florida.
Oh, yeah, Wild Things.
That's exploitation
right
there.
Hang on here. Let's see here. The Bodyguard from 1992.
Oh, was it? I wonder if that was scenes of or...
Bring It On, In It to Win It.
Okay, Bring It On sequel.
Caddyshack.
There are a lot of golf courses here.
Cape Fear.
And Bill Murray is set up here with a lot of stuff. Cape Fear, yeah. Some of Cape Fear because that's panhandle stuff.
Cocoon and Cocoon the Return.
Okay.
What was that one with Gwyneth Paltrow that was shot at the Kazan in Sarasota?
Which one?
Apparently part of The Devil's Advocate.
Oh, that's interesting.
Days of Thunder.
Oh, yeah. The Bad Boys movies were shot, have parts mostly shot in Miami. Yeah, as well as Cuba
Bad Boys.
And some other places. Bad Boys.
Oh, let's see here. Edward Scissorhands.
You got an alphabetical there? Or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flight of the Navigator.
Okay, Flight of the Navigator. Yeah.
Ocean's 12.
Parts of that's like scenes were shot there.
Because
a lot of that was shot in Europe, too.
Yeah. Let's see here.
Well, I can tell you.
Wild Things. The Water Boy.
That's right. Waterboy was shot pretty close to Central Florida.
Van Helsing.
That's more of like a studio thing.
True Lies.
Again, Miami scene shot in Miami.
Transformers Dark of the Moon.
I think that was again. That's Cape Canaveral. That's when they shot out of Cape Canaveral. So they did same thing with Men in Black 3.
Lethal Weapon 3.
Lethal Weapon 3 is when they shot in downtown Orlando and they blew up the old City Hall. That's awesome because the whole time that's supposed to be in L.A., but they shot that in Orlando.
Spring Breakers.
Obviously, yeah, they shot that in Panama City, right?
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Where did they shoot that in Florida? Again, that must have been like maybe a studio or just
Smokey and the Bandit.
Okay, that's just throughout the South.
Let's see here. What else we got?
All right, well, I can tell you because you haven't named it yet. I can tell you my favorite movie shot in Florida so far. Of all those movies, names
Religious?
Yeah, they did show up in a couple
Problem
places.
Child 2.
Problem Child 2 was filmed in
Porky's,
Orlando.
Porky's 2, Porky's Revenge.
Porky's movies, right. Let me tell you real quick because you're not going to
get it. Frankenstein meets the Space Monster.
You ready? You ready? You're never going to get it. You're never going to guess.
Okay, go.
Ernest Saves Christmas.
Of course.
Yes, I love Ernest Saves Christmas. That was shot in Orlando. A big deal when it was shot in Orlando in 88. And you can see a lot of College Park. You can see a lot of the roads, the highways. There's fucking nothing out there. It's all green trees and shit.
Yep.
You can see parts of downtown Orlando way before it had a bunch of extra buildings on there. It's very sparse looking downtown. I think it only had like the SunTrust building. That was it.
Yeah.
Also shot in the Orlando area. Larry the Cable Guy, health inspector. Was totally shot. I mean, the city hall, not the city hall, the courthouse in downtown Orlando was used. A bunch of buildings around town, different restaurants. But the movie wasn't set in Orlando. It was set in a nondescript city that they never named.
Yep.
Kind of the same thing with Ernest Saves Christmas. Did he ever call it Orlando?
Nope. I don't think so.
I don't think they ever made it big. Although it was. They were talking about how they wanted the snow. And it's like, I would like to see some snow for Christmas. And then Santa makes it snow. Anyway. Of those movies, you got a favorite? Any of them pop out of you? Like, oh, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Spring
Breakers was a lot of fun. That's very Florida, too. Yeah. Spring Break forever, y'all.
Spring Break.
Florida films forever. There should be more movies shot in Florida. A lot of stuff got shot in Sarasota, right? Didn't that Woody Harrelson movie?
Palmetto
was shot in Sarasota, right?
Yes.
Sarasota tried to get a nice little film thing going on.
Great Expectations.
I mean, how come more people should come out here? And actually,
it's the rain. It's the rain. That's what it is.
No, it's not just the rain. Because they can almanac that shit. They know when they can come here and not have to deal with the rain. And you still visually you get the palm trees. They do that shit all the time where they'll film while it's cold out, but people will be in tank tops and pretending that it's hot, and vice versa. Christmas movies are filmed during the summer because they got to come out during Christmas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to fake that shit. It's called acting. Acting, right?
Acting.
More movies should be filmed in Florida, man. Florida films. Forever, yo. That's what I'm saying. Florida, they are passing now more tax incentives to try to lure more productions to the state. If we get more stuff out here, it's just more opportunities, more cool stuff. It looks better for the state.
Agreed.
You know, state's got a bad PR problem. State needs some PR work. And it's going to take more than Emeralds, Florida to turn that shit around. Let me tell you that. All right, so hey, there you go. That's a pretty good question. Thanks for your question, Matt Celery. I'm going to steal this one from Kevin. Matt Celery, my favorite low-calorie listener.
Boom.
Love that guy. At Nathan Williams _, what movie do you wish you saw in the movie theaters in its world premiere? What would you like to have been there first? The first one to see that shit. You know what? It just came to me now. Fight Club. I would have loved to have been one of the first ones to see Fight Club and be able to look at people like, you don't know. Your role is going to change. Have you seen this one, man?
I was going to say that, too. Or maybe something like one of the ones with like the big reveals.
Well, yeah, like Usual Suspects or Sixth Sense, something like
or
that.
Or an L.A. Confidential.
Ooh, Empire Strikes Back.
Oh,
that would have been fun. I would have loved to have gone to the Cinerama premiere of Lawrence of Arabia on a giant 70mm screen with the Cinerama. It's like three screens wide. It's so big. You know, we're talking like an 80-foot wide screen. That would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That would have been cool. This takes me to a tangent. I want to go on a tangent real quick about the use of the word premiere when it comes to seeing a movie first, right?
Uh-huh.
There's some people who like to say that they go to a premiere of a movie because they want to sound special. They want to sound like, oh, I'm a special fucking guy. I'm VIP. I only go to movie premieres, right? But really what they're doing is they're just going to advanced screenings in their own town.
Really fancy advanced screenings.
Let's just say, not even that really fancy. Let's say, because I've been to things like this. Let's say, for example, it also really depends on the city you live in.
No.
When a movie premieres in this country... for real, where do you think it actually premieres? The first time a movie is played in America?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, take a guess.
Somewhere in California.
Somewhere in California. Kind of close to Hollywood, yeah, where they make the goddamn movies, right? Where all the stars live.
Yeah.
So they can actually show up to their own premiere, right? A lot of times, those are premieres in California, or else they may have a premiere in New York if the stars, some of them live in New York. Otherwise, they're tied to film festivals. Sundance. Yeah. Telluride. Toronto. When a movie plays there for the first time in a certain part of the world, that's a premiere. You can even break it down to regions. For example, when did we see John Dies at the End together at the Florida Film Festival?
No.
No? Okay. When I went there and saw that last year, I think it was, that was the East Coast premiere. That was the first time that movie had played anywhere on the East Coast in this country. The director was there, Don Coscarelli. That's a premiere of a movie. When a movie, like a big summer movie, like say, what's coming out this summer? Pick like Noah. Say Noah's coming out, right? Say a week before Noah, you go see the movie in an advanced screening on Tuesday before it comes out on Friday. That's not the fucking premiere.
No, 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 it is not.
No, it's a goddamn advanced screening, you know? It's just, when people use language like that, it ticks me off. Because you're trying to make it sound like something it's not. What happened? You can go to anyone. Hey, people, you want to go to a, quote, premiere like that? This is what you do. Go to GoFobo.com. They're not a sponsor. They don't ask for this. But go to GoFobo.com. G-O-F-O-B-O.com. Put in your email, and you will get regularly email updates that tell you, hey, you want to go see this movie a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks before it comes out? All you got to do is click on something, print it out, and they show up at the movie theater, and they let you in for free. The only thing is they send that email out to like 5,000 people. So that they're hoping 1,000 people will print it out and show up, so that they're hoping that they'll have a full theater no matter what. You know, so you got to get there early as hell to take advantage of these passes. And usually when you go to these things, you get there, there's a row or two roped off. And that's for press. People who want to review
press.
It. You know, the press row, okay? That's not a fucking premiere. It's just an advanced screening. So if you hear some douchebag, if you hear some random douchebag, like on, say, I don't know, just randomly saying, if you hear some random douchebag from Boston on who calls into a morning show in Florida for some odd reason, and he brags about going to the premiere of something in his town in fucking Boston, where they don't do premieres of movies, because no one fucking important lives in fucking Boston. The most important fucking person in Boston is Mark Wahlberg. So take that. And he lives in L.A., so fuck that anyway. So if you hear something like that, just hypothetically speaking, I pulled that out of thin air. That guy's a douchebag, because that's stupid. It's not a premiere. It's an advanced screening. So that was my little rant about that. It was just I thought it was kind of timely, so I just want to kind of get that off my chest there.
You feel better now, Chris?
I do feel a little better.
Good for you.
All right, last question. This one's from @crazyloco_. Going off the Crespo Disco episode, the one where we did the cover songs, what is your favorite cover song from a movie? Got anything on my cover song from a movie?
I mean, like I said, they used the cover of Take On Me in Basketball.
That's right. That was fun. I enjoyed that when he played that. They also did the Crow 2 soundtrack. Was it the Crow 1 soundtrack? It had a Rob Zombie, White Zombie cover of I'm Your Boogeyman.
Oh,
I think that's a Crow 2 soundtrack.
Yeah, probably.
But it's better than the movie itself, I'm Your Boogeyman, gotta say. That's a tough one. Cover songs used in movies. Yeah, well, yeah, you just want to go with those two answers?
Yeah, sounds good to me. Everything else is too much brain power.
That is a lot of brain power, man. We're at the end of the show here. We're an hour and a half into it. No one's even listening anymore. So why don't you say let's wrap this thing up here.
Yeah, all right.
I'm checking here. We got no question from Billy D. So Billy D is silencio this week. And yeah, that's it. So thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Drew, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
Get ready for the Oscar episode, dude. +4. That's the handicap.
I'm still going to slaughter.
We're going to come up with, a bet, a good bet.
Oh, we'll figure that out sometime.
We'll figure
eventually.
That out. We'll figure that out soon. All right. Well, I'm pretty sure I see some sharks on the horizon. So let's get our protective fires going here in the middle of our raft.
Dude, we already burnt up all the wood. There is no protective fire this time around.
No, we got these papers here. What's this? A map? We don't need this map, right? We'll just take it to currents.
We'll just drift.
All right, we'll just drift. We'll just drift until someone finds us. We'll get on the new
no
boat.
No one's ever going to find us.
They're going to find us. I remember the GPS. I put out the flare. We're good. Did you see the flare I did 2 days ago?
GPS?
The GPS. The GPS we threw in the water, remember? And it's sinking. It's at the bottom of the ocean.
Hey, hey, guess what?
It's going boop, boop, boop. It's not outer signal. We're good to go.
But we're not anywhere near that GPS anymore.
We did float away from it, didn't we? It's caught current and stuff. Uh-huh. Maybe a whale ate like Jonah. I want to see the Jonah movie.
We're dead.
So come out and find us in international waters. Please save us. And if we can get into SS Crest with you so too, next week we'll be back. So it's cliffhanger. Wait, hold on a second. Wait, cliffhanger.
Find it.
All right, here.
Playing Halo, bro.
Check 1, 2. Check. How's it going? Welcome to Sunday Girls. That
sounded really weird, Chris.
That's my new character.
What, and his name is?
His name is Scrimshack. That's his name.
That's a tongue twister.
It's his first name.
And all he does is.
Well, he's from another dimension.
Uh huh.
And that's why we don't understand him.
And he communicates by.
Like that. You're like, what the hell's that?
It sounds like you're eating something.
Wait, maybe he is. Scrimshack is constantly eating.
Nazi Temple of Doom. What the fuck?
The fuck?
More information.
Why are you at the Nazi Temple of Doom?
Well, because it's one of those Smithsonian Channel things that I never get to see. Witness a find that has baffled archaeologists and academics, Chris.
But not in the engines.
A gold cauldron found at the bottom of a German lake in 2001. Though it was originally thought to be an ancient artifact, it might be a modern relic linked to a covert Nazi cult. Bah, bah, bah. Nazi Temple of Doom.
I thought I had I guess I don't. I thought I had a dramatic, like, bum, bum. Oh, you know, that's a different soundboard. All right, wait. Say Nazi Temple of Doom like that again.
All right, hang on.
Nazi Temple of Doom.
No, that one stunk. One more time.
Nazi Temple of Doom.
That's the one.
There you go.
That's the one, Chris.
Check 1, 2. All right. That's good enough.